We're on a mission from God.
And now for something completely different.
This is Pastor Jolly John McComsky coming to you from my home in New Athens, Illinois.
And this is Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark coming to you from my office here where I serve as pastor at Ascension Lutheran Church in beautiful South St. Louis.
And you are listening to Wrestling with the Basics on KFUO Radio or on your favorite podcast. So, Matt, you know, my wife has this calendar that has a joke, a pun for every day, and we're falling behind. So here's what I want to do to start off the show. Have you got a timer handy?
I certainly do. Right here on my handy cell phone, I've got my stopwatch feature.
Okay. So what I want you to do, I want you to say go and start the stopwatch. I'm going to see how many jokes I can get in a minute. All right?
Okay.
Because we don't want to waste a lot of time. Just a minute.
Got it. You want me to keep count, too, of the jokes?
Oh, can you? Well, I don't know. Can you do that?
I think
that?
I can do both.
Oh, man. I am impressed. You young guys, you are so much. All right. That, if you can keep track of the number as well as. Don't mess up the clock, though, because it's important. We're going for the Guinness Book record of how many jokes can be done in a minute.
All right.
On a show called Wrestling with the Basics. I kind of think we've got it. We got it sewed up.
That broadcast on KFUO Radio. Okay. Yeah. I think we can, it's kind of a niche area. I think we can do pretty well at this.
But we'll make the next Guinness book. That's all we care about. All right. You tell me when to start.
Okay. I'll give you a countdown. Three, two, one, go.
Lord of the Rings, now you're Tolkien. The past, present, and future walk into a bar. It was tense. A century ago, two brothers insisted that it was possible to fly, and as you can see, they were right. I had a glass of the best milk I've ever tasted today. It was legendary. My friend Tony told me not to say his name backwards. I replied, why not? I got fired from the keyboard factory yesterday. I guess I wasn't putting in enough shifts. I once heard of a knight that would fight using only a block of cheese. The legends say it was extra sharp. A pun is not completely matured until it is fully grown. The only way to cure the invisible man is to take him to the ICU. My cat swallowed a ball of wool a few months ago. She's just had mittens. When I lose the TV controller, it's always hidden in some remote destination. Is the mitten not up yet?
It's... it was...
Okay.
And when you asked, it was on the nose. 1 minute exactly, John.
I don't know if I could do anymore.
I know. That was great. Well, we don't know if we can handle anymore, so that's good.
That's right. So did we get a count?
We did. So we have, by my count, that was 11 jokes in 1 minute. Congratulations,
whoa,
John.
Whoa.
Well done. So that's about five a second, something like, or I mean, one every 5 seconds?
One every
like
five
that?
Seconds. Yeah, a little better than one every five. No, I guess a little less than one every 5 seconds. All right, well, we'll keep working
done.
On it. We'll see if we can break our record in the future.
Some 11 future in day, 1 minute.
We'll see if we can do 12.
Very nice. Now, if we were keeping track of the good jokes, our number would be a little lower. But
oh, that might be zero. If we did that over a whole series of episodes, it probably would be one, maybe two.
That's right.
All right, we really need to get on to it because people listen to us not just for the bad jokes. Maybe no one listens to us for the bad jokes. I have no idea. But I do hope we do a good job of doing what we talked about last week, which is bringing people the testimony of witnesses. And we have another testimony from a man named John. And he got to hear Jesus pray for the disciples right before Jesus is crucified. And that's where you're going to take us today, right, Matt?
That's right, John.
The high priestly prayer. Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Or maybe you're going to deal. If you're going to deal with this in your presentation, go ahead and say. But why do they call it the high priestly prayer? I just got to thinking about that.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, for me, I would answer that in part just by saying, you know, what does a high priest do, right? And yeah. part of what the high priest does, when we read about that role in the Old Testament even, is brings the prayers of the people before the Lord, right? And represents the people before God. And I think Jesus is very much fulfilling that role in this prayer. You know, as we listen to Jesus pray, that's one of the things I want our listeners to really listen for is, who is Jesus praying for? And I'll give you a hint, it's really not himself. You know, he mentions yeah. himself in this prayer, but guess what? This really isn't a prayer about Jesus. It's a prayer about someone else. And I think in that we really see his high priestly role. He's representing someone else before the Father in heaven, bringing this petition before the Father on their behalf. So that'd be my answer, John. In this case, you know, certainly that's part of it. I think the other part of it might be, you know, that when this prayer is being prayed. So do you remember when this prayer is being prayed, John? This prayer at the end of the Gospel of John?
Right. Well, I kind of just said that earlier, right before Jesus is crucified, right before they yeah. come. I mean, are we in the Garden of Gethsemane here?
Yeah, you know, it seems like we're in the upper room, maybe even
okay,
here.
Okay, okay.
And it is right after, you know, the Passover celebration, the institution of the Lord's Supper. And you're exactly right. It's just a matter of hours before he's arrested and, you know, on trial and then finally crucified. And, you know, I think that the priestly aspect of that, right, we think of Jesus as both priest and victim, you know, yeah. and as Jesus anticipates that role, he prays this prayer. So, you know, maybe in a high priestly aspect there too. But I think just knowing the context of this prayer makes it all the more powerful. You know, what are the words that Jesus chooses to pray in these last hours of his life here on this earth, right, leading up to his crucifixion? What is on his heart, right? And I think that prayer reveals that to us.
And the fact, by the way, that he's not praying silently, okay,
yeah,
that he's praying out loud. He wants this to be heard by his disciples.
Yeah.
And they're absolutely going to need to know this prayer because they don't know that Jesus is going to die. They think they're going to be brave and courageous men, and yet they're going to learn the truth that they are just a bunch of cowards without Jesus, without his
yeah.
spirit.
Yeah, I love that detail, you know, because Jesus, he's lifting up, chapter 17 begins, Jesus lifts up his eyes and then says, you know, he's speaking out loud these words. It's heard by all. So I guess, you know, to introduce this a little more, I remember, you know, early on in ministry visiting someone in their home, an older gentleman who might have been the first time I met him, you know, shut in and, you know, having a conversation with him about life and asking questions and really kind of receiving just one, two word answers. And I'm thinking, boy, I am crashing and burning with this with this individual, right? You know, it's time to pray together. And I said, well, do you have anything you'd like to pray about? Anything you'd like for us to include in our prayers together? And that's when, boy, he just opened up about, you know, his own health-related issues, you know, the specific struggles of his family members, you know, things that were really on his heart, he revealed in the form of prayer requests. And I think there's a truth to be learned there, and that's this. If you really want to know what's on someone's heart, listen to them pray. If you really want to know what's on someone's heart, listen to them pray. Because I think when they pray, we're honest. At least I hope we're honest, right? We hopefully bear everything before God, and we're honest before him, not hiding anything, because after all, God knows it already anyway, right? So hopefully in our own prayer life, we practice that too, that we really do share what's in our heart with the Lord. And I think that same truth is seen here, that we really see what is on Jesus' heart as he prays in this upper room on Maundy Thursday. And as we listen to the prayer, you know, again, try to answer that question, who is on Jesus' heart? So, and, yeah, and you ready to read the prayer, John?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say real quick, you know, it's interesting because my professor, Dr. Nagel, said the exact same thing. If you want to really know what a person believes, he said,
yeah,
you need to listen to their prayers. Okay, so we're going to see what Jesus actually believes.
Yeah.
What does he think? What's on his heart? Where would you like me to start reading?
So, yeah, let's go ahead and focus on verses 13 through 19 of this prayer.
Okay. But now I, that's Jesus, I am coming to you, and these things I speak in the world, that they may have my joy fulfilled in themselves. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they are not of the world, just as I'm not of the world. I do not ask that you take them out of the world, but that you keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Sanctify them in the truth. Your word is truth. As you sent me into the world, so I have sent them into the world. And for their sake, I consecrate myself, that they also may be sanctified in truth.
Yeah, thanks, John. So this we get to listen in on Jesus pray. I think that's pretty cool. Yeah. So as he prays to his Father in heaven, you know, who is on his heart? You know, who is he praying for?
Well, he's praying for his disciples.
Yeah. So he's praying for his disciples, for his followers, and elsewhere in the prayer we hear about praying for those who will follow and be his disciples through their witness. So he's praying for his followers, his disciples then, but even today by extension. So
for,
I think
for us. Right, yeah.
Amen. So in a very real way, I mean, you're on Jesus' heart. You know, whoever our listeners are, if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, you know, you're on Jesus' heart as he prays this prayer just before his death. I think that's pretty cool. And if that's the case, that then Jesus is really praying for you. Well, then what is Jesus asking the Father for on your behalf? And that's what I want to look at today. And I guess one way to look at it is in those words where he says, I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they're not of the world, just as I'm not of the world. I do not ask that you take them out of the world, but that you keep them from the evil one, and then sanctify them in the truth. Your word is truth. You know, Jesus is talking about the world here, and the cosmos, you know, it's the Greek word here. And when Jesus uses that word, especially in this context, you know, what seems to be the biggest distinguishing factor between the world and his followers? What makes the difference? And I think in the context of this prayer, we look at verse 13. John, what makes the difference between the world and the followers of Jesus Christ?
Well, Matt, I'm going to tell you, you have actually stumped me. So what is the difference?
Well, yeah, I would say in this context, it's the word,
Okay.
Verse 14, too. I've given them your word, and the world has hated them because they're not of the world. So, you know, Jesus has given his word to his followers, and they've believed it. They've accepted it. They've received it. But the world hasn't. In fact, the world hates them because they've received the word.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jesus' followers have the word, and they know they receive the gospel of Jesus Christ. They believe it, you know, by the power of the Holy Spirit. The world, on the other hand, hates his followers because of that. They've rejected his word. They rejected the message that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. And that, in this context, I think, is the biggest thing that distinguishes the followers of Jesus from the world is the word. How do they receive the word? Do they believe it or not? That word about who Jesus is.
And the thing is, I remember at the beginning of the Gospel of John where we are told the word became flesh.
Yeah, that's a great connection.
So it's not like you're rejecting a teaching. And maybe that's an important thing to remember. It's not like we're arguing about teaching. We're arguing about a person. His name is Jesus Christ. He has described to us who he is, what he's come for, what his reason, what he's done. And that's why the doctrine is so important. It's not because it's some doctrine, but it is because it is Jesus Christ himself. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. You know, the rejection of the word made flesh. Wow. Yeah. I mean, that in the end, that's what distinguishes a Christian from the world is what do they think about Jesus, right? You know, is he God and Lord or not? Yeah. So I guess the question that I want to wrestle with today is, you know, how does a Christian then live in the world? So if in that context, how does a Christian then live within the world? And so I want to suggest two possible ways, John.
Okay.
and then maybe one really good way. okay. Kind of a heads up. All right. So I'm assuming
the first two are not the way we should live in
well,
the world.
That could very well be the case.
Okay.
But at the same time, I think they're routes that some people take, you know.
Okay.
You know, for instance, you know, one option I think is to just, well, as a Christian, blend into the rest of the world, right?
Yeah.
Because nobody likes to be hated. I don't like to be hated. So if Jesus is right, and if the world really does hate its followers, that's what he says here, well, just blend in, you know, be a little less conspicuous as a Christian, less conspicuous as a church, maybe even just blend into the rest of the world. You know, I think of one church, and I won't name names or denominations here, but there's one church here in St. Louis. Boy, it's in a nice part of town. It's on a main street. It is a beautiful stone church, over 100 years old. And it is, by all accounts, this church, you know, boy, they've got it all. It's enviable.
Yep. Yep.
As you drive past it, you could tell though, they've tried pretty hard to blend into the rest of the world. There's flags and signs in the front yard of the church, and they're very much reflect what the world says today, especially about issues like sexuality and things along those lines. Very much reflect the world's message. And then at the very corner of the property, there's one more sign. It's the biggest of the signs. And the sign just says, for sale.
Oh, my.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So the church, the property, it's all for sale. The church has dwindled that much in size. And they're selling the place, lock, stock, and barrel. It was in the newspaper not too long ago, one of the papers in St. Louis. And, you know, and it's like, well, golly, what's going on? They're trying to blend into the world. And, you know, they've got it made. And, but yet it's maybe shouldn't come as a surprise. In fact, I won't name denominations or pick on people, but that denomination they belong to is the whole denomination seems to be going the same way, trying to blend into the world, and it's shrinking. It's one of the fastest shrinking denominations today. But again, it doesn't come as a surprise in some ways, because, you know, if what we hear at church is no different than a show we watch on Netflix, you know, well, then why come to church? I mean, streaming at home, that's more comfortable. And Netflix is probably more entertaining. So, you know, why do I want to be, active in a church and even sacrificial in a church that's no different than the rest of the world, right? You know, what's the point, right? The answer then isn't, I don't think Jesus' answer is to blend into the rest of the world. That's not what his prayer is about. In fact, in his prayer, he says, if we're really in the word, right, and a follower of him, then we're set apart from the world. And I think of how the word does that, especially the word in baptism in our baptism, we were set apart. We were set apart from the rest of the world. We're conceived sinful. We're under the power of the devil until Christ claims us as his own. Sets us apart from the rest of the world, and makes us his own in baptism. You know, no longer citizens of the world, but instead we're heirs of heaven now. Why? Big difference. Don't blend in. Instead, no. Jesus is clear. You've been set apart by the word. Yeah.
And I just have to make two comments. And number one is that's what the word sanctify. That word sanctify was used twice in the passage. And
yes.
I just think people need to understand that's actually, because we usually hear the word sanctify mean, well, you're good, right? Mm-hmm. If you're sanctified, then you're good. But actually what the word sanctify means is just what you said. It means you've been set apart. You're no longer part of the hoi polloi, as you might say. And of course, that's what we need to realize. In baptism, we are different. We are different. We're set apart from the world. The question, though, and I'm sure you're going to get to it, is how are we different from the world? Okay, that's the question. How are we different from the world? And at the same time, I also would just throw in the reminder that we who have been set apart from the world also have been told that God loves the world. Okay, so just because we're set apart doesn't mean that he hates everybody else. But anyway, I don't want to jump the gun on what you got to say. So number one is, no, we can't just blend in. Because we don't blend in. If we're Christians, no, we are apart from the world. And I can say that might mean some hatred for us. What's number two?
That's what Jesus says, at least. Yeah. Okay, number two, John. Yeah, option number two. Okay, you're not going for option number one, I can tell.
So
option number two is, okay, how's a Christian in the world? Well, considering how bad the world is, okay, all right, Jesus, you know, seems, you know, as a thing, it's pretty bad not to receive his word, right? So maybe the answer is, well, we just don't live in the world, right? A Christian, maybe we retreat from the world, right? And maybe we kind of lock the doors of our homes and, you know, we shelter in place. we want to be safe from this virus that is the world, the big bad world out there, right? Because, again, it hates us anyway. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord and the world can just go to hell, right? That's option number two for you, John. I don't think that's even the answer that some Christians have individually, but maybe some churches and congregations have, and maybe we don't even realize it, right? That, you know, instead of our doors being open and welcome to all people for whom Christ died, right? Instead, we sort of close our doors to keep out the world and to ensure that those who come to church are just the good people or just the good Lutheran people, John, or just the good Lutheran people who are well-dressed and keep their kids quiet at church. You know? but no. That's not at all what we should be doing. I mean, if the church was just full of good people, it would be an empty church. The pulpit would be empty, for crying out loud, if it was just good people in the church. That's not the answer either. The answer is not to isolate ourselves from the world. In fact, Jesus, again, in his prayer, even says he has sent them into the world, right? Verse 18, I've sent them into the world, just as you've sent me, right? So instead of isolating from the world, no, we're called to be in the world, but to be witnesses, you know, in the world. Think about that. I mean, you know, Luther talked about this too. You know, he was pretty critical of the monastic life and thinking that it was somehow holier, that if, you know, if you're a monk and locked behind closed doors, separated from the rest of the world, you're somehow living a holier life. And he said, well, no, not at all. You know, it's hard to serve our neighbor. It's hard to love our neighbor if we're separated from our neighbor. So really to fulfill that calling, yeah, we got to be in the world, you know. To isolate ourselves, that's not the right answer either. That's not a faithful response, and that's not a faithful way to live as a Christian in the world. Yeah.
And it's ironic because you talked about monasticism, and what was ironic is they actually thought that is what made them good, because they did separate themselves from the world because they didn't participate in anything. But you're right. He says right there, he doesn't pray that we'd be taken out of the world. That was never the plan, that we would just leave all of this evil and wickedness that's out there, the hatred that we have to deal with. So that's not the plan. So Matt, we're now down to the third option, which I'm hoping, is there one that we should be doing?
Yes.
Because we shouldn't blend and we shouldn't just leave the world. So how should it be? What does Jesus pray for us?
Yeah, I thank you, John, because I think for that right answer, we need to go back to Jesus' words, right? Not to Matt's words, right, or John's, but, you know, as the two of us, but to Jesus' words. And again, we go back to his prayer. And again, Jesus has us, his followers, on his heart as he prays again, Father, I do not ask that you take them out of the world, but that you keep them from the evil one, right?
Yeah.
And to me, that sounds a lot like another prayer that Jesus prays. the Lord's Prayer, right?
Yeah.
Father, deliver us from evil. And, you know, the original Greek text there says the evil one. Deliver us from the evil one. Martin Luther, in his large catechism, he writes about that petition, and he says, there is nothing for us to do upon earth but to pray against this archenemy, the devil, without stopping. For unless God preserved us, we would not be safe from this enemy for even an hour. That God keeps us from the evil one. I think of, I don't know if you heard about that story, but a few weeks ago, there was an attempted shooting in a church in Pittsburgh. And this gunman entered, it's on video, you can watch it. You know, this gunman goes in the church, walks to the front, points his gun at the pastor, smiles at the guy, and then pulls the trigger. and the gun jams. It doesn't go off. Wow. And then one of the elders of the church, subdues the guy and wrestles him to the ground. You know, and I think that's an example. You know, what a sad situation. And I think, was that the work of the evil one, that act of violence? And I think, well, yeah, it sure seems like it.
Of course.
And was it the work of God keeping that congregation and pastor from the evil one? And I'd say, well, it sure seems a lot like it too, right? You know, one example of being in the world, but yet being kept from the evil one. So, how do we live as a Christian in the world? Well, you know, Jesus doesn't pray to his Father, take them out of the world. In fact, it's just the opposite. No, I don't want you to take them out of the world, Father, he says, but keep them from the evil one. And so to live as Christians in this world, realizing that, yeah, we are sent into it, just like Jesus was sent into the world. And as we go about our lives, being witnesses to others, sharing the word and the word made flesh with others, confident that God's going to keep us from the evil one. You know, that's Jesus' prayer for us. And he does that through his word. That's what I'm going to go back to again. You know, his word in baptism that claims us, his word in Holy Communion that sustains us in faith, the word in the benediction that sends us out in peace, right, back into the world to be witnesses. And most importantly, that word made flesh, you pointed out, that clinging to Jesus, you know, the world, the hell itself, they can't harm us. You know, Jesus and his death and his resurrection, he's overcome the world. That's what he says. So we don't want to isolate from the world. We don't want to just blend into the world, but to live in the world as Christ's witnesses, bearing witness to the word, even as we're confident that God will keep us from the evil one.
It's interesting that the prayer concludes that they may also be sanctified, and as we said, set aside in the truth. And the truth is, Matt, the world is evil. The world is wicked. No one's denying that. You talked about good Lutherans. There really are no good Lutherans. We're forgiven Lutherans. That's who we are, because we know we're part of the world. We have sinful flesh too. But that reminder, again, coming from the Gospel of John, for God so loved the world. So how could we blend in? How could we separate ourselves from, when we know that what the Lord Jesus wants is to bring his love and his forgiveness to everybody out there, especially the people who don't deserve us? And we're the proof of the pudding, because he gave us that forgiveness, even though we didn't deserve it. Thanks, Matt. This has been Wrestling with the Basics.
Showing support for KFUO is now easier than ever. You can sport a KFUO shirt, swag, or even socks by visiting our online store. Go to KFUO.org/store and order high-quality KFUO-branded merch. You no longer need to wait for our annual share-a-thon for a chance to show your KFUO spirit. Visually share and wear this ministry out in the world by checking out our selection. Every purchase helps to support our proclamation of Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. Go to KFUO.org/store.